Welcome to New Persuasive Words, a podcast of hope seeking understanding. Join Scott Jones and Bill Bohr for an ongoing conversation about theology, culture, and politics. Funny, contentious, outrageous, there's something for everyone. And now, your hosts.
Welcome back to New Persuasive Words. I am, as always and ever, Scott Jones.
And I'm Bill Bohr. Happy St. Francis Feast Day, Scott.
Thank you. I'm going to go out in the woods and dance with dogs.
Oh, very nice. Well, I am actually blessing animals on the front step of our church, which I've never done before. But here in Vermont, where nature is worshipped and the living God not so much, I thought this was an opportunity to maybe reach out to our community. I'm also giving a talk tonight, which, by the way, will be live in you'll be able to live stream and also just look at it later on GNAT, G-N-A-T, on the spirituality of nature. So there I go. There's a plug.
Will you address the animals by their proper pronouns?
Well, it always is safe when it comes
to animals. What about they?
They, yeah, sure, there's a couple of them.
I'm just saying.
I think with an animal, I'm safe with it. Don't you think so? Yeah.
I guess. I mean, this is that you can't be too careful with pronouns these days.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what will be the most unusual animal they bring. Hopefully not. We won't have to see that. So
yeah, it's interesting because you think about pronouns back and when you're learning English grammar and syntax, not the most exciting day of class. Now pronouns, it's probably the most exciting day of class.
Right. Well, you know, at least we're not like other languages where we have neutered or we have engendered nouns, which would make it more complicated.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that would be very complicated. Well, yeah. Bill, we have an unprecedented development today.
Yes.
Or yesterday.
Yesterday.
Rather. We have, for the first time in the history of the United States of America, a Speaker of the House was removed through a motion to vacate. This has never happened before in the history of the Republic.
Right. Well, you know, and it was inevitable, right? It was only a matter of time, particularly because, you know, when he made that compromise to get the speakership, but after 15 votes, you thought it just was a matter of time till somebody was going to test it, right?
Yeah, this is never a strong speaker, and you know, unlike John Boehner, he didn't leave singing zippity doo dah. Remember when John Boehner left? He was like zippity doo dah, zippity yay. John Boehner was kind of had that emotional press conference. He was thrilled to leave.
Yeah, he was. Well, it was not an easy job. Remember that little video he did with Obama when Obama was retired?
This is great. I had a beer at 11 o'clock today.
And that he now, you know, he works for the Marijuana Association. He's a lobbyist for marijuana.
It's good work if you can get it, I hear.
It's good work if you can get it. Yeah. So, yeah, no, it's not a great job. It makes you realize exactly how, what an amazing politician Nancy Pelosi was, because she had her detractors in her party. She had the same kind of party majority, and you look at what she was, how she accomplished and what she did, and she went out on her own terms. So, yeah, it would be a very hard position to have in as a Republican, because there are many, well, I don't know how many, but there are earnest Republicans in the House. I had one from my previous district in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, but they don't really care about governing. They don't really care about the country.
Did you have Fitzpatrick?
Yeah.
I guess that's what passes for earnest today. All right.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I wrote to him a couple of times and they were not very lovely exchanges. And one, my favorite one, when I could criticize his budget vote and he goes, "I'm an accountant." I go, "Well, then you should know better," was my return.
Well, there you go. There you go. This is what happens when Bill Bohr gets riled up, everybody. This is what's interesting. We have a razor thin, majority in the House, a Republican majority in the House.
Right.
So I think there are maybe three or four scenarios that could happen. All of them seem unlikely. And yet one of them has to happen. Well, right?
And there's two vacant seats. I just looked that up. I didn't realize that. But there are two vacant seats. So what do you think happens next?
Okay, so here would be scenario one. Scenario one, which I think is, again, these are all unlikely. This is, I'm gaming these out. They're all unlikely, but something has to happen.
Right.
I think,
you right? can't, you cannot, you, it's a constitutional position. It has to, there has to be a Speaker of the House.
Yeah. I mean, it's a, so the first option is you get what, a handful, I think you would need like five Republicans to defect, and you get a Democrat, right? They give it to the Democrats for, you know, the next election cycle for, you know, for a year.
And by the way, Jeffries seems to be consistently the adult in the room.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's, I really didn't know much about him when he got elected, and he has actually looked very statesmanlike.
Yeah. So that would be, again, this scenario seems unlikely that they give the House up to the Democrats, but it's
theoretically
is
possible.
So,
right. Yeah.
The second possibility would seem that some Democrats defect. And I mean, here's the thing that would be really interesting. And I think the politics of this would be interesting. Just let them have a year of MAGA, have some short-term MAGA, pick somebody that you think is objectionable. You already have campaigning saying, look, Roe versus Wade is repealed. This is a group that, you know, is trying to take the country back. You know, the rhetoric. I mean, you know how it works. So let the Republicans have, a sort of, you know, a Matt Gaetz-esque Jim Jordan kind of person, right? That would be one possibility, right? Another possibility.
Well, I don't think there are not going to be any Democrats defect and elect a MAGA. Well, you know, McCarthy was a MAGA guy. You know, it's the reality. It was interesting. I can't remember the commentator's name yesterday, but he said, you know, just because Kevin McCarthy wears a suit doesn't mean he's really any different ideologically than Jim Jordan.
Well, I think though McCarthy though did want to govern. I think. I mean, I think he had an interest in he. I mean, he was not the like burn the whole thing down person like someone like Gaetz is, right? I mean, Gaetz has zero interest in governing.
Right.
So then the third scenario would be that you get a moderate Republican, right? You find the, you know, one of the three of them. That would be a third scenario, which again would require defections on the Democrats,
right?
Or the fourth scenario would be, I think, that you go, which is constitutionally, it's the constitutional prerogative, pick someone from outside the House.
Well, which there's been talk. Remember, there was talks about making Trump the speaker of the House.
Trump would be great as a legislature. All right.
Oh, my gosh.
This bill is so beautiful. It's a fantastic bill. Look, it's like a perfect bill, like the phone call to Georgia. It's a perfect phone call. Have you ever in your life described something as a perfect phone call?
Nope. Never. Never.
I mean, I listened to the call like three times. It's like a perfect call. It's a beautiful call. I've never made a beautiful phone call in my life. I just don't understand if people. But so the or like, you know, bring in somebody like Mitt Romney or somebody, you know, or some statesman like Democrat. Somebody, I mean, somebody that's out of the Michael Bloomberg. I don't know, like somebody that is a sort of consensus. Hey, we can all get behind this, but. But all of these, so something has to happen, but I can't.
How about Rudy?
Rudy Giuliani?
Yeah, he's got plenty. Well, you know, he seems to, his drinking record would make him qualify, given some of the past drinking
habits. He could govern right from the Betty Ford Clinic.
That could be done. Who in the world does everyone like that this could happen?
Oprah.
Oprah, well, not Republicans. Republicans don't like Oprah.
Yeah, that's a good question. Who does that? But if we could come up with someone like that. But again, all the thing is in a very close, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. Yeah, Dwayne Johnson. You know, Dwayne Johnson might be the Dwayne Johnson scenario. You know, but think about this. This has to each any of these scenarios require defections.
Well, right. Well, I guess. What about Scalise? Scalise, is that how you pronounce it?
He's got cancer.
He has cancer.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I didn't even have to get any treatment. What kind of cancer?
This I don't know, but that's one of the reasons he's not.
No,
yeah.
Wow, I didn't know
he's,
about
yeah,
gosh.
He's
that man has not had a good number of years, has he?
Tough, very, very difficult. He's had a rough few years. So I don't. Yeah, I just don't. I'm trying to imagine what is the scenario whereby defectors go because what's the majority? Two.
Liz Cheney's free.
Liz Cheney is straight. Liz, I mean, the fact that her father's a vampire might help her with the vampire crowd.
Right. There we go. There we go. I don't know.
I mean, look, yeah. I've heard it said that people saw Dick Cheney wheeled away quickly from a blood bank car.
Dick
Cheney, the great thing about Dick Cheney is this is why I want to be Dick Cheney. When you shoot someone in the face and then the other person has to apologize for getting in the way of your gun.
There we go.
That's real power, dude.
You
that's
played
power.
Your cards well, sir. Well played,
that is
sir.
Power, dude.
Yeah, get out of the next time I shoot you, please move.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, Bill, we're throwing out like three or four scenarios here. One of these has to happen.
Right.
So, I mean, but like, it's just, I can't imagine. This is where it'd be very interesting to be in the room in some of the conversations, to be in the rooms, I guess.
Right.
To see actually what kind of arguments are made for scenario one or scenario two or scenario three or scenario four, because again, one of these will have to prevail because we have to have a speaker.
Right. Yeah. You know, what do you think about, what's your take on the Democrats? Well, I guess McCarthy was constantly stabbing them in the back. So there was no love lost there. So I thought an argument could be made that what they have in McCarthy, it could be worse. Right. But they voted in block. Right. So I don't know. Yeah. I'm with you. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I really have no clue. I mean, so it's but
let me
you
ask
know,
you this question. Maybe you don't know this. I don't, but and maybe there are people in Congress that don't know this. So we have a 45-day spending bill, right? Spending extension.
Like a CR, right? Continuing resolution.
Right. What happens if? What happens if there's no House of Representatives to vote on something?
I guess you'd have a shutdown.
I guess the government shuts down.
Right. I mean, Yeah, because the federal government, with exceptions, right? I think there's certain stuff like the military, but you would just be in shutdown, but not, you would be, same thing as if you can't pass a resolution, you'd go into shutdown mode.
Well, maybe that's a motive among some of them not to have a solution.
Well,
you're giving up power, right? You're giving up actually influence that way.
I'm looking this up also, by the way. The longest speaker vote was in 1855 and 1856, where 133 rounds of voting.
Yeah.
We might be there. I mean, it's not unlikely.
There's a record. Well, I guess the modern record's 15. So that one's certainly up. Yeah, I don't know. And I guess who's the de facto leader of the Republican Party in the House right now?
Donald Trump.
Well, right. And we know how well he does things. So I'm sure
I forget the name of the guy who's acting speaker now. Nice looking guy, bow tie.
He actually looked like he should be a economics professor.
Yeah, which is high praise to me.
Yeah.
There are days I wish I would have studied economics.
Yeah, boy, I hope that. What's the woman? Who's the whip? But no, Scalise, what's the next one? Next person down. Scalise is the whip, right? Or is he the majority? No, he's the majority leader. The woman who's the whip, she represents the New York district across the river from me. She is the one, I can't think of her name right now, but she was the one who was kicked off the Harvard board and has gone from being a moderate to a full-blown MAGA.
Do you know what kept me from being an economist, Bill? Seriously?
What?
You know what seriously kept me from being an economist?
No, tell me.
I never took any economics classes.
Oh, there we go.
Other than that, I think I'd have been fantastic as an economist.
The only C I got in college.
Economics?
Yep.
Wow.
And my advisor, which one are you supposed to take first? Micro first, then macro?
That's a good question.
Well, at any rate, whatever order you're supposed to take them in, I didn't take them in that order. My professor said, oh, you're a good student. You don't need to take the first class. He was totally wrong about that. he was absolutely wrong about that. So
if he's a listener to the show, which is very possible, we hope that he is doing better, or he's probably retired at this point.
He might no longer be with us. Dr. Kluger was not a young man, a lovely guy, but he did not give me the best advice in that time.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I said, I don't know what you do at this point. So I guess we'll start. I think Jim Jordan was on Hannity last night and Hannity was asking if he would serve and he was very cagey about it. So like I said, I wonder a couple things too. I don't think for at least the base, I mean, Matt Gaetz was raising so much money off of this ouster, right? So
right.
with a certain part of the Republican Party right now. Like, I think for Democrats, shutdown is bad politics. I mean, the last time the Democrats were responsible for a shutdown, I think, was 2018. That was over the wall.
Right.
But in general, like, if you think that, if ideologically you think the federal government is generally a more than just a benign thing, it's actually good and spending money is helpful, then shutdowns are not incredibly helpful. But I remember one West Wing episode when the Republicans shut down the Congress, or shut down the government, the new speaker said, look, this is Christmas early. I mean, we're going to let people see how useless this federal government is. And I wonder if that's a... So that to me, if I'm a Republican strategist, that's a consideration, because it's not bad politics, at least with your base, to shut things down. Now, in an election year, if you need the middle and swing states, that might be something different. But right now, we're a ways away from an election. It might not be a terrible thing to shut it down.
Or if there, if there's not a late season hurricane that hits Florida, because FEMA, I think most of FEMA's funds are not protected.
Oh,
yeah, there we go. Now I read that, and but the last time when the shutdown, I was kind of curious, well, what's affected, what's not, and I was assuming something like FEMA would have all kinds of funds available, but they don't. So there might be funds for day one, but there's not funds for, like, they'd have to stop doing what they're doing in Hawaii and other places as well. So
yeah, what does Reagan say, like, when FEMA pulls up? The scariest words you hear is, I'm from the federal government and I'm here to help.
Right. But I guess, can I just say, if you're left to designs of private help during a natural disaster, maybe the first
that's not fantastic.
That's not fantastic. Again, and maybe the first week people rally, and I think that's all good. But 6 months later, when you're still, trying to get things going, it's not the private folks who are there. So,
do you know Joe Osteen did not let people in his church during one of those bad Houston floods?
I do remember that. When Houston,
it's a bad look. It's a bad look, dude.
Yeah,
bad look.
Yeah, but he's literally things fall off him, roll off him, because I think he's got that. What's that? That rubber guard that you put on your car, I think he's got that all covered in, right?
I like that. You don't really have mega churches in Vermont, right? That's not a thing.
No. Actually, no. There was we went up to Burlington, up where the University of Vermont is, this past weekend to see my wife's sister. And we did go by, the closest thing I saw was it looked like a big warehouse that was a church. It was a hoop, and there was nothing flashy about it, but that was the biggest thing I've seen up here that would go the closest thing to a mega church up here. And I don't know what that was, but, at any rate, you don't really have mega anything in Vermont, which I kind of like. Not very few MAGA and hardly anything mega. So
no MAGA, no MAGA.
Well, there are MAGAs. Right. No, there are people up here. No, there are, but it's a minority. So. Yeah.
So I want to turn. This is one of the great, one of my favorite quotes by the late great Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who says that the central conservative truth is that it is culture, not politics, that determines the success of a society. The central liberal truth is that politics can change a culture and save it from itself. I think that is profound.
I do think it is profound.
And is that, because I do think that is something that the left, at times, I think, with the right, it understands, is that it is culture where lasting things are controlled in the culture, right? It's not always in the halls of politics, but the halls of power can do things. I think of when he says about the central liberal truth is that the government can intervene and save the culture from itself. I think of the civil rights movement.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think, or the civil war, right? Right. I also think the Great Depression.
Uh-huh.
Another example of that. I do think there's a sense where one might argue that we have a culture that's increasingly fragmented. It becomes all that much more important for there to be some unifying principles in governing, because I think culture could become something that doesn't bring us together but divides us. And so
I think this is, and I don't know, we've talked about this in previous episodes, and if you're just getting into the show, we have some new listeners of late, and you can find our whole backlog. If you have insomnia, you can listen to us for hours. We have hours of content, But we've talked about this. I think when I was a little younger, I had a much more Promethean confidence in the liberal project.
Right.
And some of this is I studied with Jeff Stout and some people. And
yeah.
The Harawas types, the Milbanks that were sort of naysayers about the Enlightenment liberal democratic project, I thought they were, you know, delivering Jeremiah ads. I was dismissive. I am much less dismissive of those voices today. I don't know that, because I mean, the idea between Enlightenment democracy, right, is proceduralism will save us, right? That we can,
right,
you can get past the sort of tribal, ideological, cultural, theological stuff, and this will create this procedural zone that will hold the diversity together. I don't know that I'm sanguine about that anymore. That we might need more of some kind of public theology, some sort of shared value system that enables us, like someone like Dr. King, right? Martin Luther King can call on the Hebrew Bible. He can call on the founding fathers, and there's enough of a consensus of these sources that he can move the country. Yeah. I don't know that we're in that spot anymore.
No, I don't think we are. I'm, you know, it's funny. I find myself going back to some of my early therapeutic training in terms of crisis intervention, and I feel like we are a society that seems to have a death wish. It's it seems like our institutions are on suicide watch. And, you know, one of the principles, therapeutic principles I learned was that you stall people who want to kill themselves. You find ways. I remember this with high school kids who were suicidal. You just keep stalling, find ways to keep, to push it down the road until they change their mind. And, I'm kind of feels that.
Do you think we could do this with Donald Trump? Just stall him until the elections. Just stall.
But I think that's part of what the indictments are about, right? Well, mm-hmm. I mean, he's committed these crimes. No, he's innocent until proven guilty, but he's guilty of sin. Maybe that's part of it, right? I keep saying there's got to be something eventually that derails this guy. I will not be alive probably when the best book about this time is written, but I would really love to have some perspective on how did this guy get away from. And I'm not just talking about the election. I'm talking about, you know, made $1 billion off of fraud. But, you know, I mean, I just, how did he continually hurt people and hurt communities and get away with it? Break the law, yeah. Bend the law, break the law, and get away with it.
No, I mean, because first off, because he has money, and things are a lot easier when you have money.
But not as much as he pretends to have.
This is true, but still, you got a lot. Even the real amount is still significant.
Right.
And there's different kinds of justice in this country if you have money.
That's absolutely the case, right? Yeah, he's a white guy from New York with a lot of money, so, and a lot of lawyers.
Despite the bad hair. Don't you think that's the other thing? I'm fascinated by Trump in this. If you have that much money, can't you get something better done with your hair? I mean, you could hire anybody to do this.
Right. Yeah.
Like, he does it well with his suits. You know, I was actually, this is the dark corridors of Clubhouse are like on the social media app, the social audio app. We were discussing Trump's like obesity for some reason. And, you know, it's interesting. He does well with suits because he gets those tailored very well. Clinton did this too. Clinton looked thinner in office because there's a famous Holocaust survivor who has made suits for presidents and athletes and stuff. I've heard him interviewed actually on Invisibilia, but suits are easier to do, right? So like where you see it with Trump is on the golf course,
right?
When he's chinos and a golf shirt, looks very different than he looks in a suit. Same thing with Clinton too. Like Clinton, you know, could see him on the golf course or jogging, looked a lot bigger than in his suits. Cause hey, suits, you know, a good tailor, never underestimate the power of a good tailor.
Well, maybe that's what the House of Representatives needs. An excellent tailor.
That's, and we're not talking Rip Taylor. Although the bow, I love that. Hello, Frisco. Well, Bill, I mean, let's conclude on that. Maybe a tailor, and who knows? I mean, you know, we pray to a carpenter, so stranger things have happened.
Well, you know what? We need a political tailor and a maybe a religious one as well. So we'll see. All right, man.
Thanks, friends.
Take care. Be well.
How about that episode of New Persuasive Words? Thanks so much for joining Scott and Bill. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and will join us next time. Till then, thanks for listening and God bless.